Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello, it's 6 a.m. in Jakarta, 8 a.m. in Seoul, and 6 p.m. here in Atlanta. I'm Linda Kincaid, in for Julia Chatterley. And wherever you are in the world, this is your First Move. A warm welcome to First Move. Here's your need to know. Allies across the globe mobilized to get maritime aid to Gaza. CNN sees some Israelis trying to disrupt deliveries on the ground. It's 10 years since Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 disappeared in one of the world's greatest aviation mysteries. Could authorities renew the search for the missing plane? And TikTok countdown. US President Joe Biden says he'll sign a ban on TikTok if it passes Congress. All that and much more coming up. But first, a massive international plan to deliver aid into Gaza, as the UN warns that hundreds of thousands of people there are on the brink of famine. The EU says a new maritime corridor from Cyprus to Gaza could open this weekend, part of a joint effort by allies including the US and UK. But there are still questions about how the aid will be distributed on land. Israel's severe restrictions have drained essential supplies to Palestinians in Gaza, leading to starvation, dehydration and disease. The US and other nations have been airdropping supplies, and some aid workers say the move is little more than a PR stunt. On Friday, five people were killed by falling packages after a parachute malfunctioned. That's according to a journalist on the scene. The Pentagon denies US airdrops led to any civilian deaths. Well, Clarissa Ward is in Jerusalem for us and joins us now live. Good to have you with us, Clarissa. So it's horrific to hear that the aid dropped by the US may have led to the deaths of five people in Gaza. A major part of the problem, of course, is the fact that Israel's not letting in aid via ground efforts. How soon could aid be delivered by the sea, and what sort of issues are there with that? Because that option has been criticized too.
So just to be clear, Linda, the Israelis are letting some aid enter Gaza, but there is a strong argument from many parties, and particularly the humanitarian organizations that are working inside Gaza, that they are not letting enough aid in and that there is too much of a chokehold at the crossings where aid can currently enter from. And so they would like to see more entry points, and particularly in the northern part of Gaza. That is the hardest part to get to. It is where some of the most desperate scenes that we have been seeing are. We actually spent the day, though, yesterday with a group of protesters who have actively been blocking aid from entering Gaza. They have been staging protests at the Kerem Shalom border crossing. Their goal is to prevent anything from getting into Palestinians. Their conviction and belief is that it's getting straight into the hands of Hamas, and they believe that there would be more chance of getting the hostages out if there was an absolute cessation of all aid going into Gaza. You would think that this is an incredibly controversial view, not bound in fact or not based in fact. But what's been interesting to see, Linda, is that it is more widely held and more prevalent than you would think. Take a look.
They march with determination to the Kerem Shalom border as they have for 6 weeks. Their mission? To block international aid from crossing into Gaza. The border police are waiting for them. There is a danger of sniper fire and projectiles, the officer warns. I ask you to leave this place. But the protesters are undeterred. Made up mostly of hostage family members, former reservists, and settlers, they ignore the order and change course to move closer to the crossing.
So you can see the trucks with aid over there.
The police had been trying to stop the protesters, but then they've just cut through this field and they're pushing ahead.
How can anyone check these trucks and see what's inside? Where bags of rice that are meant to go to their children are filled with bullets.
Under international law, it's Israel's obligation to make sure that the ordinary citizens of Gaza don't starve to death. And right now they are starving to death.
Hamas is making it very difficult because Hamas is not allowing this to arrive. They're not holding it. They're not receiving it.
But
we will do it. I'm telling you here and now. If we knew it's getting to children of Gaza, we would do it. This does not arrive at their doorstep. This arrives into the tunnels of Hamas that are fighting us and holding our hostages.
No evidence to support the idea that all of this aid is going to Hamas.
Not to the rest of the population. This is intelligence only for terror. That's why they're getting. They should get only the minimum calories required to survive.
They're starving to death.
They are not starving.
They are starving to death.
You know what? If they are starving to death, give us back, give the hostages back. No, a single loaf of bread should go there till our hostages are coming back.
To many people in the world, listening to what you're saying and what you're protesting for, it sounds like a contravention of international law, and B, incredibly callous in the face of an epic humanitarian catastrophe, in the face of children starving to death. People can't understand why anyone in their right mind would advocate for stopping aid.
Hamas has no fair play. Hamas has no rules. Hamas is holding civilians.
You know, even if there is a humanitarian crisis, and there is not, even if there is, it's my right and my duty to prioritize the life of Kfir Bibas, a one-year-old baby that is there, over any Gazan baby.
And with that, the interview is over as the protesters press on. Previously, they've managed to block aid trucks from crossing. But on this day, the police have been given their orders and no one is getting through, prompting anger from the crowd. You are confused. Go deal with the war, this woman shouts. We came to help you. Unable to cross here, the protesters try their luck in another area, but the authorities are just as quick to stop them.
So the police are now really starting to lose their patience. They've been trying to push these protesters away for hours now, and still, they're not leaving.
The crowd on this day is small, but their sentiment is shared by most people in the country. A recent poll by the Israel Democracy Institute found that 68% of Jewish Israelis oppose the transfer of humanitarian aid into Gaza. On the other side of the border, the situation could not be more dire. 7-year-old Fadi Al-Sant is suffering from severe dehydration and malnutrition. Doctors at the Kamal Adwan Hospital say they don't have the resources to properly treat him. Fadi's mother says she's already lost 2 children, and she doesn't want to lose him. According to Gaza's health authorities, at least 17 children have died of dehydration and malnutrition already. And with the UN warning that famine is just a step away, there is hardly room for debate. More aid needs to get to more people as quickly as possible.
And Linda, you heard there that the majority of Jewish Israelis do support this idea that aid should not be able to get into Gaza. But there is also a very vocal minority who categorically disagree with that. And we saw they also held a protest yesterday. They didn't make it all the way to the Kerem Shalom border crossing, but that was their objective. They had their own humanitarian convoy, and they are advocating for increased aid to be allowed into Gaza. So a complex picture here, to be sure, Linda, but the very stark reality that no one seems to disagree with is that the situation in Gaza is getting dramatically worse by the day. Linda?
Yeah, it certainly is, and it's really good to get that perspective from you on the ground. Good to have you with us. Thanks so much, Clarissa Ward. Well, after his fiery State of the Union address, Joe Biden is taking his re-election message on the road to key battleground states. These are live pictures from a campaign event in Wellingford, Pennsylvania, where the president is speaking right now. He's expected to visit Georgia, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, and Michigan in the coming days. Our Kevin Liptak is following the story for us and joins us now. Kevin, good to have you with us. So obviously, most of today we've covered Joe Biden's State of the Union address. Voters wanted passion. They certainly got that energy. And we heard him speak just moments ago, and he seems to still have that fire in his belly as he takes his message to the road.
Yeah, and that has been his challenge, is to try and translate that energy that he demonstrated in the House chamber last night and bring it to the American voter where they are. And I've been listening into the speech, and it is interesting. Some of the lines are very similar to what he said last night, but one thing that's different, in the State of the Union, he referred to my predecessor 13 times. He's not using that decorum in the speech. He's naming Donald Trump. He's going after him very harshly on things like abortion, on things like taxes, on all of the issues that he really does want to draw a contrast as the American voters begin to tune in to this general election rematch between him and his predecessor. And we did hear from Biden campaign officials today who are really casting the next month as a month of action as they work to really ramp up their campaign infrastructure. They say they're going to hire 100 or they'll open 100 new offices, hire 350 new staffers, and Biden will be on the road on all of those states you mentioned. We'll also see the Vice President Kamala Harris visit Arizona and Nevada. Those are also battleground states, very essential if Biden is to win re-election in November. And they're also spending $30 million on a new advertising campaign to try and put some money behind some of the arguments that President Biden was making in that speech, really trying to flex the cash advantage that they have over Trump at this point in the campaign. And so certainly the hope is that this speech can be something of a reset moment as voters begin to engage in this election. They'll see a president that is very much with it, that has the energy, that puts aside those questions of age and fitness that have really been dogging him over the last several months. Of course, this is just one speech, and the election is still months and months away. There are still many sort of inflection points to come for the president to make his argument and to potentially slip up as well. But certainly, they're feeling very good. And you see that in the president's demeanor as he hits the campaign trail for the first time really in earnest of this election cycle, Linda.
Yeah. All right. We'll leave it there, Kevin Liptak. Good to have you on the story for us tonight. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Well, it is the 10th anniversary of one of the world's greatest aviation mysteries and a decade of pain for families of those who were on board Malaysian Airlines flight MH370. On Friday, some of them protested outside the Malaysian embassy in Beijing, upset over the lack of progress in finding out what happened to their loved ones. Well, there are now signs the Malaysian government may renew the search for the missing plane. Our Richard Quest has been following this story very closely since the disappearance 10 years ago. Good to have you with us, Richard. So 10 years on, still no closer to understanding what happened on that plane that led to the disappearance of this major passenger jet. But are we any closer to finding it, given the advances we've seen in technology?
We don't really know. They say that there is the technology now, drone-related, submarines, autonomous, where you could send many more down below under the water. They know where the plane is. It's off the western coast of Australia. Whether it's a bit further north or south from the pinpoint, the plane, remember, took off, flew up towards Beijing, comes back down over Malaysia, round Indonesia, and then down for 7 hours, it flies, or 6 hours, into the Indian Ocean. But finding that exact spot, if you bear in mind, Linda, that the bottom of the ocean is just like the land. It's got mountains, it's got valleys, it's got sea forests, all sorts of things. And so it will take this new technology that Ocean Infinity says that they have to actually find the plane. And even then, you still got to hope that this, or something like it, this is a red box, it's very heavy. You have to hope. This is designed to withstand phenomenal forces, but you have to still hope that it will be good enough to actually give an idea of what happened to the plane.
Yeah, exactly. Hope that it's intact and still they're able to get the data from it. But Richard, just in aviation in general, it has been a bad week for United. One incident after the next involving their jets.
Yes, we had a 777 that left a wheel behind as it took off from San Francisco, somewhat embarrassingly, going from San Francisco to Japan. And then today you have another plane on a smaller route to Houston. There's the picture. And there is the wheel. There it goes. And it did a lot of damage on the ground, by the way. I mean, that thing was not only had forward velocity, but it was also spinning. So on the ground, it managed to do serious damage to parked vehicles in an employee car park. And then you have this other 737 MAX, 4 years old, which Houston, it was a domestic flight, ends up in the grass. Now, it is not clear how or why. The pilot asked to taxi to the end of the runway, because I think it was a quicker taxi to the gate. And the next thing you know, air traffic control says, by the way, you're in the grass. And the landing gear, the left gear, had collapsed. We don't know if it collapsed because it was in the grass or it collapsed and then it rolled into the grass. But anyway, here's the not long and short of it. No connection. No connection. Nothing to worry about in a sense that there is anything systemic. Because in Miami today, you had two planes where wings touched each other. An American and another plane, their wings just touched each other and caused a little bit of damage.
I mean, so no connection, but still, like, not great PR for United.
Oh, look, if I'm in the United Corp comms department today, I'm going to offer a very strong drink this evening because you have got to describe and explain and you've got the investigations and you're going to have all of those things.
Yeah.
It could have been much worse, absolutely. But as far as in terms of the travelling public, you and I, no, there's no connection. This is just one of those things.
It is good to hear. And I hope, Richard, that you are going for a strong drink. I hear it's your birthday tomorrow.
Yes, I know.
How young will you be?
I am proud. 62.
62. 62 and going strong. Going strong, my friend.
62.
Have an amazing, amazing birthday weekend.
Lovely to see you. Thank you.
Celebrate. Thanks, Richard. Well, still to come, your weekend weather forecast straight ahead. Plus, TikTok shock. Fans of the social media app are up in arms over a potential ban in the US. Joe Biden and Donald Trump are both weighing in. And from Pakistan to Paris, Brussels to Beirut, International Women's Day was observed around the world Friday. Organizers saying the fight for gender equality is far from over.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome back to First Move and a good Saturday morning to you if you are just waking up with us in Asia. In today's Money Move, the US stocks have pulled back from record highs on Friday despite a not too hot, not too cold jobs report. The US economy added a greater than expected 275,000 jobs in February, but job gains in the previous 2 months were revised sharply lower. The unemployment rate also ticked up to just under 4%. We'll call it a nightmare scenario for the millions of TikTok users across the United States. The U.S. House of Representatives is set to vote on a bill that would force TikTok's Chinese owner to sell or spin off the app or face an effective U.S. ban. The bill has support from both Republicans and Democrats who believe TikTok poses a national security risk. And President Joe Biden said Friday that he will sign the bill if it gets to his desk. That puts him at odds with his likely Republican challenger in November, Donald Trump, who says he is now against a ban after supporting one while he was president. A TikTok ban risks alienating young U.S. voters during an election year. Capitol Hill staffers say TikTok fans are already flooding congressional offices with complaints over the legislation spurred on by a TikTok call to action campaign. Well, Lance Yudlanov joins me now. He is the U.S. Editor-in-Chief of TechRadar. Good to have you with us, Lance.
Thanks for having me.
So a bill to ban TikTok here in the U.S. could head to the floor as early as next week. Lawmakers are concerned about China using it to spy on Americans. Do you think the bill will pass?
Well, it's the one thing that everyone seems to agree on in the U.S. government. I've never seen such agreement, and it's existed for a while, but it hasn't really, you know, we had a year ago, basically a year ago, we had the CEO of TikTok before Congress and trying to explain himself and promising a whole entire, I think it was called Project Texas, a whole plan that included moving all of the data from China to Oracle Cloud in the U.S. and you know, making the U.S. team larger and basically sealing off all the data and all access as much as possible from the parent company, which is ByteDance in China.
And that, of course, came after TikTok was fined for the collection of information of 150 million Americans. And it wasn't just information that they posted on TikTok. It was any sort of data anytime they used their phone. Do you think you can completely trust TikTok now?
Well, here's the thing. I'm definitely not saying TikTok is perfect. They absolutely made mistakes with data. They even had some people that were accessing like US journalist data. Like they've had to clean up their act significantly. And that's happened a number of times over the years with TikTok, which started as a company called Musical.ly. So it's had a long history. But to be fair, US social media companies are no better. The sloppy management of data runs across basically every social media platform that we know of, whether they're in the US or they're owned by China, it doesn't seem to matter because data is so powerful, it's so important, and usually it's all about selling ads against it, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that's really question here is whether or not China has nefarious purposes. Is it manipulating the algorithm to try and shape and mold the minds of young people? Is it telling the US operation to give them access to the data? There are no indications that it's doing any of these things, but that is the continued concern.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And of course, TikTok denies these spying allegations. They put out a statement that said this legislation will trample the First Amendment rights of 170 million Americans and deprive 5 million small businesses of a platform they rely on to grow and create jobs. Lance, back in 2020, you wrote an article that had the headline, "If TikTok goes, so does my liberty. Do you still believe that today?
I mean, I think it's a very, first of all, 2020, what an interesting year. TikTok sort of was the thing that felt like it supported all of us at the time because we're all trapped in our houses, didn't know what to do. And there was this platform just sitting there that allowed us to connect and feel free and to dance and do whatever and have, you know, it felt pretty open too. And, you know, why the government wanted to get involved at that point was beyond me. I understand the concerns with China, but I also know that we buy a lot of stuff from China. Our iPhones, many of them are made in China. Now, companies are trying to move these things away. But it's always been interesting to me that so much attention is paid to TikTok when there are myriad other issues that we'd like to see solved sooner. There's a way to start to move this conversation forward by educating users about when they are on these platforms, what does that actually mean, and what they should and shouldn't share. Because there's a way to use TikTok without really sharing much information about yourself at all, but people don't think about that, much in the same way they don't think about it when they're on Facebook. So I think I'm not in favor of a ban. I think that would harm, first of all, there are 7,000 U.S. employees at TikTok. And then there are the 150 million plus U.S. users of the platform. Many of them are businesses. And a ban will do nothing but harm all of those people. There has to be another path forward. One thing I've started talking about on social media is whether or not ByteDance will sell.
And there's also the other issue that if this ban were to happen, that some other platform would appear in its place. But we'll leave that for another day. We'll see how this plays out here in Congress. Lance Ulyanov, good to have you with us. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the weekend weather forecast looking pretty quiet across East Asia, but the heat is on in southern Australia, where temperatures are set to sizzle. Chad Myers joins me now from the CNN Weather Centre. And Chad, it's meant to be autumn in Australia, which is fall here, but it feels like summer.
It does. Melbourne's going to be 37 degrees for the next three days straight. Then a cold front comes by and it gets better. But yes, it is going to take some time here with some almost record-breaking temperatures, without a doubt. So here we go. Most of Europe is in good shape. Most of China is in good shape today. The only place that on my map that's seeing too much here is more snow for the western prefectures of Japan. They're saying, wait a minute, give me a daffodil here once, not another 30 centimeters of snow, but unfortunately, that's what they're going to get. Now, they go play in it, I get it, and it's a lovely place with all of that snow to really enjoy, and that snow doesn't get into Tokyo, because we're still going to be well above freezing here, 8, 9 degrees for the afternoon high. But the cold air is kind of slow to be going away here. There's warm air trying to get here. Spring is trying to arrive in China. It's just taking kind of a longer trek than I think a lot of people would like. Tokyo, you get above normal here finally by next week, but still very close to normal all of the week, just a few showers coming through. And then we get down here to Australia, where the heavy rain is in the same place that it has been now, just stuck in this pattern now for at least 5 days. Heavy rainfall again. We are going to see another 150 millimeters of rain in places that have already seen it. And have seen it over and over and over and over and over the past couple of days. There's the cooler air, mild air trying to get up here into Melbourne, but it is going to take some time. And here are the numbers here for today, very warm. But finally here, the heat will just relinquish by Monday and Tuesday of next week, 37, 37, 36, and then voila, 24. There's your phone.
24. That sounds lovely. little bit better than 37. Good luck to all my family in Melbourne this weekend. Yep. Chad Myers, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. You bet.
We'll stay with CNN. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with much more news. Welcome back. I'm Linda Kincaid. Well, Haiti continues to descend into lawlessness. Gangs have overrun the capital, Port-au-Prince, and Prime Minister Ariel Henry is believed to still be in Puerto Rico, according to our sources. U.S. officials are urging him to accelerate an urgent government transition, but gang leaders warn of a genocide if the prime minister returns. Right now, children are bearing the brunt of this violence. Several of them tell CNN that they've been orphaned, wounded, raped, or even recruited by members of these armed groups. CNN's David Culver sat down with them and heard their stories.
On an abandoned airfield turned makeshift campsite, we step into this cramped space, the Kado family's home. Lying on her family's only bed, we meet 8-year-old Wajina Kado, looking at us with eyes that have seen the torment and suffering that is engulfing Haiti.
Do you remember where you were when the bullet hit you, when you got shot?
With her 4-year-old sister keeping close watch, Wajina tells me she was playing with friends when they were caught in the crossfire of a gang shootout. She and her friends hid, but not quickly enough, a bullet tearing through her back and out her abdomen. Her dad, frustrated by life.
And he says they've been here about a year and a half. Before that, they were in their own home, but they said because of the gang violence, it was overtaken. Their home was burned down. So here they are hoping to have found what would have been a safe refuge, but he says, not even this is safe. Feel better, okay?
Chaos now grips much of Haiti, especially the capital, Port-au-Prince. For the first time, a Haitian security source tells us rival gangs are now working together, launching a wide-scale series of attacks against the government, going after the airport, police stations, and prisons. The terrible toll of the violence felt nearly everywhere. Even here, behind the high walls of Kizito family's home for children. Run by Sister Paese, the rules here posted on the wall.
Children must be friends.
They must be friends. They must get along with each other.
Getting along, that's the challenge here. Sister Paese's lived in Port-au-Prince for 25 years, the last 5 of which she's dedicated to creating safe spaces for children. Many of those here orphaned because of the deadly gang violence.
I never could have thought that things could become worse, but it did. It did. Year after year, more corruption, more violence, more weapons.
This place is now at capacity, and then some. The children keep coming, she tells me. No. Sister says she also gets prayer requests from those you might not expect.
Sister, pray for us. Don't you see we're in danger? Pray for us. I'm hearing that every day from the gang members.
Yeah. The gang members are asking you to pray
yes,
for them.
Yes.
Some of the gang members, themselves, just kids. This 14-year-old says he was recruited at 11. I can't go to school, he tells me, wishing he could escape the gang's control. I watch so many people get killed, and then I have to set their bodies on fire, he says. Outside of Haiti's capital, it's more often the anti-government protests rather than the gangs paralyzing cities. In Jeremy, we drive with members of the World Food Program to a local school.
And these kids have not been in school since early January, and they'll tell you why.
The Catholic priest who runs it shows us around.
Just noticing on the chalkboard here, the last date, January 11th, it's the last time kids were actually inside this classroom since it's been just empty.
Violent protests erupted in January, making it too dangerous for the school's 234 students to travel to. For the staff here, it's heartbreaking.
Do you think about them in what's been now more than a month that they haven't been here? Do you think about their situation?
It's very sad for them, for us also, because I know
he knows it's about more than missing out on an education.
I know they are at home, they are hungry, they have nothing, they are children, they have to eat.
Hunger is what drove this young teen to go out at night alone in gang-controlled territory last year, hoping to find food. Instead, she tells us she was attacked and raped, giving birth in January to a baby boy, the son of a likely gang member, she thinks. I can't abandon him, she tells me. My mother struggled a lot with me, so I have to do the same for him, even if it is a child raising another child, she says. Children bearing the brunt of a broken country that is spiraling further into chaos with each passing day. David Culver, CNN.
Well, Kwanli Cladstrup is the Haiti Country Director at Concern Worldwide. She joins me from Port-au-Prince. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Over the past week or so, we've been talking about the deterioration in Haiti, the gangs ruling the street, torching cars, torching shops, the UN saying the healthcare system is near collapse. You've been living through this. Explain what you have seen.
It's very hard to explain because, you know, we're living now in uncertainty. We don't know what's coming next. And, you know, everybody is trying to adapt as best as they can. Since the start of the year, we have seen an escalation in violence, in conflict, and, you know, resulting to displacement. And just in the past, you know, couple of weeks, we've already 15,000 people have been displaced. We're sending our teams, you know, to the sites where, you know, people have been displaced. And what we are seeing is trauma. You know, people have been living through this. They've been living through this for a couple of years now, you know, and they are tired, and, you know, they're sort of at their wit's end, you know, not knowing what next. And I think, you know, that's the most difficult aspect that people are facing right now.
And I think you made an important point. It hasn't just been this week. It's been years. And it's important to remind our viewers that it's 3 years since the assassination of the president, 7 years since Haiti held elections. Did Haitians see this coming? Like, did you think this was going to spiral out of control to this extent?
I don't think we expected it to spiral to this extent. I arrived in August 2019, and already, you know, we were seeing protests and, you know, mass demonstrations. And each year I kept thinking, okay, you know, it's going to get better, which it hasn't. And we, you know, every day, you know, even talking to my teams, we're thinking, okay, you know, what next? I think, you know, people have adapted and are trying to live as best as they can. But, you know, everybody is living in fear because we don't know what's going to happen next or what area is going to be attacked next. And so, you know, it's that sort of adaptability that, you know, people are struggling with because they have tried. And it's very difficult now for them just because of the spiraling violence. Cost of living has also increased, you know, and it's very hard for them to sort of meet their own immediate needs right now.
Yeah. And of course, in talking about those needs, we know that with a population of over 11 million people in Haiti, about half are estimated to be facing acute hunger. Take us through what your team are doing on the ground.
So we have a food assistance program where we are, you know, reaching 22,000 people, and we're linking them with vendors in their neighborhood because in times of heightened security, people aren't able to move out of their neighborhood. So this way, you know, by working, you know, very much community-based and working with our communities and with local vendors within that community, people are at least able to purchase food and at least, you know, meet some of their basic needs. But I mean, given the crisis and continuation, the needs just continue to escalate. So, I mean, food assistance, you know, is a continued sort of priority there. But I mean, right now, because of the cycle of violence that people have been living through, you know, addressing gender-based violence and you know, be it physical, sexual, verbal violence, that, you know, has now sort of become a priority just because people are so broken. Mm. People, communities are, you know, not functioning as they should be. So, you know, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. And to some extent, you know, we sort of have to go back to basics in building individual self-esteem and confidence again.
And just in terms of what needs to happen next, briefly, we have heard calls for UN-backed police force to come in and sort things out. Where do you stand on that?
I think it's very difficult to sort of see where things are going. I mean, we are waiting, and hopefully, you know, they will bring some sort of stability. But I mean, what is really required is, you know, that peace and stability and, you know, to be resolved so that at least, you know, humanitarian actors can continue and can scale up their responses right now.
All right. Kwan Lee Kladstrup from the aid organization Concern Worldwide, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it, and we wish you all the best in your work in Haiti.
Thank you.
Well, still to come after the break, dedicated women committed to improving the state of the world will pay tribute to those fighting to make our planet safer and a more equitable place. International Women's Day is next.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. I'm Linda Kincaid. Women around the world have come together to celebrate their achievements, but also there's been a call to action, and we've seen that in cities all over the world. Women taking to the streets to make sure their voices are heard on International Women's Day, protesting and rallying against gender inequality and gender-based violence.
Around the world, International Women's Day serves as a reminder of the long-standing fight for women's rights and a recognition of the achievements of women everywhere. The holiday began to be widely celebrated in the early 1900s with marches and protests in the United States, Austria, Denmark, Germany, and Switzerland. It gradually spread to other countries. On Friday, that fever could be felt across the globe as women took to the streets, many celebrating, some mourning, almost all demanding change. In Germany, South Korea, and Thailand, women rallying for issues like wage gaps, reproductive rights, and longer maternity leave.
I want the public sector to take care of the women. We all work, and we are not just housewives.
Some marking Women's Day in Indonesia are fisherwomen in a trade dominated by fishermen. They're looking for government recognition of their profession so they too can have the same protections.
Female fisherwomen face similar risks when performing activities at sea, such as accidents and threats from extreme weather. That's why it's important to recognize fisherwomen as a profession so we can get protection similar to male fishermen.
Women in Lebanon gather in support of Palestinians in Gaza. They insist there can be no celebration when women in Gaza don't have full rights amid the war.
You know, today is International Women's Day and is a celebration for women taking their rights and not being marginalized. But we are here today to support Palestinian women as she is now in war, living war, violence, and pain.
In South Africa, Jewish women protest what they say is their government's silence. They chant, "Me too, unless you are a Jew," referencing the alleged sexual abuse of Israeli hostages by Hamas. Israel believes 130 hostages taken on October 7th remain in Gaza, of whom at least 31 are dead.
The world has been silent. Our government, our president, who constantly talks about how gender-based violence is such a priority for him. But has he said one word to condemn the sexual violence that happened to these Israeli women?
For Ukrainians, this Women's Day is the third in war. Air raid sirens are temporarily drowned out by splashes of color in the streets, and soldiers exchange their weapons for flowers. On this International Women's Day, Ukrainians acknowledge the courage of nearly 46,000 women serving in their armed forces, a figure up 44% since the war began.
Military women, I will say that they are strong women, even very strong women who dare to go to war and fight not only for her rights, but also for the rights of the country. That is, it is noble.
In France, this Women's Day was a celebration of a world first, the constitutional protection of abortion.
Beyond Europe, we will fight to make this right universal and effective, and we will lead this fight for all women.
And a promise by the French president to continue pushing for women's rights, while women around the world both celebrate their progress and march for an even brighter future.
Still to come, how to make sure your office behavior doesn't make it into an episode of The Office. We'll introduce you to the etiquette experts and their post-lockdown do and don'ts. Can you pass their workplace test? We'll see. Welcome back. Workers are returning to the office and bringing their bad behaviour with them. The loud chewers, the snack stealers, the co-workers who won't use headphones, that's me sometimes. Companies are turning to etiquette consultants, as Claire Duffy reports.
The return to the office was tough for many people. It meant returning to long commutes, less flexibility, and an unwelcome surprise. Some people have forgotten how to behave.
A resume builder survey from July found that nearly two-thirds of companies are planning to offer workplace etiquette classes in 2024. The issues are wide-ranging, from how to behave in front of clients to what conversations are appropriate for the office. And etiquette consultants like Ann Chertoff say demand is booming.
So in the past 2 years, we've seen a 100% increase in companies reaching out to us and ordering trainings in a variety of topic areas.
We spoke with Chertoff about some of the most common workplace behavior faux pas and how managers should handle them. And with the help of some willing coworkers, she gave us some hands-on pointers.
All right, so Ann, talk to us about proper workplace attire. We just saw workplace sweatsuit. What do you think of that?
So the way we do dress attire today is dress for your day. And if you're at home, you can definitely wear athleisure, you could wear sweatpants, because you're not interacting with other people in a visual way. But if you're going into the office, you need to step it up a little bit.
Now, some of these issues have been around for a long time.
Oh, come on! Do you see this?
Habits from the work from home era are coming back with people as they return to the office.
Leaving the dirty dish on the counter, not the right move.
No, because you're not being respectful or considerate to the other people that you work with.
Adjusting to the hybrid work era brought challenges of its own.
Tony! Guys, tell him something. This is public and recorded!
What's appropriate for a Zoom call still causes debate, including whether you really need to get fully dressed.
The problem with wearing pajama pants or sweatpants or, you know, leggings from the gym or something like that, is that if you do have to get up to get something, they could see that you're wearing athleisure.
And it's not just Zoom calls. Taking old-fashioned phone calls around coworkers can also lead to all sorts of problems.
Yellow. Yeah, he's sitting right behind me. Why?
It's not just eavesdroppers who cause friction. It's also those who do this.
Yeah, are we going to happy hour later? Yeah, where are we going?
So if we were trying to get work done here, we were trying to have a meeting, this would probably be a little distracting.
So sometimes people don't realize that the volume of their voice is as loud as it is. And I've been a victim of that, so I completely get that. They might not realize that they're talking so loud. They might not realize that you've overheard their entire medical history on the phone.
Chertoff told me she works with all types of companies on workplace etiquette. And while all levels of workers participate, dealing with one group of employees has proven especially tricky.
Companies are hiring us to come in to teach new hires, Gen Z right out of college, first job right out of grad school, but also to kind of reinforce those skills to colleagues who were out of the office in remote settings for so many years, and now they're coming back.
Now, while this era of return to work has brought its challenges, there's good news, too. Chertoff says all of these things are like muscle memory. So as we get used to being back together, we should get better at remembering how to behave. Claire Duffy, CNN, New York.
Well, finally, on First Move, tying the knot in your 90s. Billionaire media mogul Rupert Murdoch has popped the question yet again. The 92-year-old is now engaged to Elena Zukova, a 67-year-old retired biologist and a former mother-in-law of a Russian oligarch. The couple reportedly started dating in the summer and plan to marry at Murdoch's luxury vineyard and estate in California. She will become Murdoch's fifth wife. I guess you can find love at any age. Well, that just about wraps up the show. I'm Linda Kincaid. Thanks for joining us. I hope you have a great weekend. I'll be back next week. See you soon.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.